Hello, and welcome to Sentencing Practice Talk, a podcast for federal sentencing practitioners presented by the U.S. Sentencing Commission. In this episode, my colleagues Lori Baker and Alan Dorhofer, Director of the Office of Education and Sentencing Practice, sit down to discuss monetary penalties relating to sex offense cases. Lori and Alan walk us through restitution and assessments made in sex offense cases, including the difference between mandatory and discretionary restitution, the special assessments for both the Amy Vicky Andy Act and the Justice for Victims of Trafficking Act, and much more. Without further ado, here are Lori and Alan.
Today, I have the privilege of being joined by the director of our Office of Education and Sentencing Practice, Alan Dorhofer. Alan, thanks for being here today.
Thanks, Laura. I'm really excited about this. I think this is my first podcast ever.
Well, we're going to have a lot of fun today. So Alan and I train a fair amount together on the topic of guidelines relating to sex offenses. And questions always arise about monetary penalties. There are various assessments, restitution that can be imposed in these cases. And those are largely driven by statute. These are not really guideline related, but we get a lot of questions on this topic. So Alan is here to walk us through some of those statutory requirements. So do you want to give us kind of big picture, what types of things are we dealing with in these cases financially?
Sure. I think this is one of the areas that a lot of people don't focus on. And then it comes back to sometimes lead to a lot of different issues, particularly even on issues on appeal. And what I want to focus on today are three main areas about these financial assessments that occur in sex offense cases. And in this area that we're going to see, it's not just issues related to congressional statutes we have to deal with, but there's also a big Supreme Court case called Paroline versus United States that came out in 2014 that also impacts the way that courts have to handle this. And then there are just a various number of issues that we see. So there's three main areas I want to focus on today to make sure that people are aware of these issues before they either have one of these cases come up or if they're working on one of these cases now.
So what are the three main areas that we're going to talk about today?
The three areas are restitution, and we'll talk about whether that's mandatory or discretion restitution. Two, a special assessment called the AVAA. I oftentimes say AAVA, as Lori knows, but it's the AVAA, which is the Amy Vicky Andy Act. And it's at 18 U.S.C. 2259A. And then there's another statute at the JVTA, which is a Justice for Victims of Trafficking Act, and that's at 18 U.S.C. 3014. And they all have different numbers sometimes that are associated with them and different analyses that must go into those three issues.
Well, I can tell you firsthand, when I was working on these cases back as a probation officer, these items really confused me. And there's so many other things in play when you're working on these cases that you're right. Sometimes these fall to the wayside. You're not really thinking about them till you're getting to the end of it. And things can, you know, go without being taken care of. So let's start with that mandatory restitution at 2259.
Sure. And so I think probably the most important area here, I think, is the restitution. As those who are familiar with restitution, the goal of restitution is to make a victim whole. So we're now focused on actual victims. And so if there's a known victim in a particular case, and in a lot of these cases you're dealing with, sometimes there are victims, particularly production of child pornography, sex trafficking individuals, they're always going to be the individual victim. But we also have these cases involving possession, receipt, and trafficking of child pornography, where maybe the defendant didn't take the image in question, but there are still, obviously, as we know, victims of the CSAM, of the sexual abuse images. And so with restitution here, most people are familiar with 18 U.S.C. 3663 and 3664 and 3663 big A. Those are the restitution statutes for all type of offenses. But Congress has passed a specific restitution statute, 18 U.S.C. 2259, that primarily deals with the trafficking of child pornography, which includes things such as possession, receipt of child pornography, and also production of child pornography cases. What the statute talks about is to make sure that a victim is essentially made whole. And what we focus on, and the courts have looked at, is it's while we want a number at the end of the day, and we'll talk about what that number would look like, it's not a precise mathematical inquiry in that courts are given broad discretion in this area. But as with all increases in the guidelines or sentencing, the burden does fall on the government to try to make the case for what is going to be compensable and to which individual. The cases where things get really tricky, I think, are the possession, receipt, and trafficking of child pornography cases. Those are the ones where the person hasn't necessarily taken the picture, but the courts are required to look to make sure under the mandatory restitution that if a victim of one of those images is seeking restitution, that restitution would be imposed on a particular defendant.
So I think it's sometimes easier when we're thinking about production cases where you do have the live victim as part of your case. Then restitution is just like any other case where you're collecting that information. The court is looking to order that restitution. I think the difficult part, as you just said, is those receipt distribution trafficking cases where it's not necessarily the live victim from your offense, but from, you know, previous offenses. So how does the court go about making that determination?
Right. And that's really difficult. And even the Supreme Court in the case Paroline said this could be a difficult analysis to do when you have these kind of cases where we know if somebody has an image of CSAM, for example, we know that most likely many other people have those similar images in those possession, receipt, and trafficking cases. And the idea is to try to make sure that the individual victim gets the compensation that they're seeking. And but at the same time, not that we want to make sure that the defendant is held for his causal role in the harm that he has done by possessing, receiving, or trafficking that image. The Supreme Court focused on a number of factors. There are seven of them. They wanted the courts to look, for example, I won't talk about all seven, but to see whether the individual trafficked the image versus possessed. Trafficked the images may lead to more culpability and more restitution. Two, other areas that we might see in or other factors that the court will look at is to see how many images individuals possessed, received, or trafficking. So there are a number of factors that the court will look to. What the court also has to do, if there is a victim seeking restitution, the 18 U.S.C. 2259 set a floor of $3,000. So in every case, some people might refer to it as a minimum, but if an individual victim is seeking the restitution, the court needs to calculate the victim's total losses, then looks to the defendant's causal role based on those factors that I mentioned from Paroline. But in any case, there's going to be a $3,000 minimum. And then, of course, the court would have to see sometimes you have to sometimes cap the victim's losses because if that individual is seeking $2 million and they've received that, say, $1.9 million from already, we're going to try to cap that award to make sure that the court doesn't go above that $2 million. With that, some of the things the court needs to look to in what can be covered include things such as physical, psychiatric, and psychological services, physical therapy, could be lost income, for example, if a parent, for example, has to take off work for some of these appointments, and even future therapy costs would be coming into play. I think many of the courts start with $3,000 and then work their way up. So typically, we see sometimes amounts $10,000, $15,000, as long as the government can show that this individual who's seeking the restitution may have future therapy costs is something that courts look to a lot.
Let's talk a little bit about that future therapy quickly. So future therapy has to do with we think this victim is going to have long-term implications, is going to need treatment down the road. How do you go about making estimates for that?
Yeah, and I think sometimes what the government will seek is they will try to seek a therapist who has dealt with some of these children before, and they will get an estimate of how many weeks, say, of therapy, months, sometimes years. If you look at some of the cases, there's a really good case out of the 11th Circuit called U.S. versus Osman, in which one of the therapists said that they're particularly for people who have been victimized at a young age, there may be four stages of therapy that an individual might have to undergo. So the government might need to seek some testimony or at least some documents, an affidavit or something from a therapist who, even if they haven't actually examine that individual, but that would be some things that the court will look to try to determine what the amount would be, is looking to some of these potential costs that could come into play.
Well, this is not an easy determination, is it?
No, and that's exactly why I think the courts will say district courts have a lot of discretion here. They oftentimes won't come behind the scenes and say, okay, well, maybe 10,000 is an appropriate amount, but it still falls on the government to show the court that this individual will need some kind of therapy.
Let's move on to the Amy, Vicky, Andy Act, AVAA. Tell me about that. That's an assessment, right?
Right. And to make things even more confusing, Congress set up a assessment and they used almost the same statute numbers, 18 U.S.C. 2259, but they just added a big A. So where this falls is that 18 U.S.C. 2259 big A. And also to make things a little bit more complicated is it is a mandatory amount that the court needs to consider. Here, as opposed to the mandatory restitution, the court does here get to look to the ability of the defendant to pay this special assessment. So that is a factor the court will look at here with the mandatory restitution statute. They don't typically look to the ability to pay until they actually are coming up with the structure of the payments. There are three numbers that the courts have that I like to focus on. My simple brain likes to think of things in simple numbers and buckets. If someone possesses images of child pornography, the court can impose up to a $17,000 amount. If they trafficked in child pornography, they can impose up to $35,000. And if they're convicted of child pornography production offenses, they can impose up to $50,000. In order to decide what amount the court is going to impose, the court does need to look to the 3572 factors of whether a defendant can pay a fine, for example. So the court starts with under 18 U.S.C. 3553A, what they think the appropriate assessment might be, but they do get to look to the ability of the defendant to pay. Some of those factors include things such as, is the defendant, does he have a court-appointed counsel? What's his earning potential when the individual is released from imprisonment, if the court's going to impose imprisonment? And then also the years of employment after release. Those are some of the factors the court will consider in deciding whether to impose the special assessment. Another key issue here is, while with restitution, I mentioned a little bit earlier, you have to have a known victim, with AVAA doesn't require a known victim. This is just an amount that's going to basically be ordered by the court, and the amount gets deposited into the child porn's victim reserve fund, then that's what's going to be ordered. Where in restitution, restitution is going to be ordered to an actual individual person.
So let me see if I have this right. This is based on the offense of conviction, and the numbers are either $17,000, $35,000, or $50,000 based on that offense of conviction. But once the court makes that determination, then they look at the defendant's ability to pay and can alter that figure. Now, can it be waived altogether?
Right. And so a couple things. One, when I say the $17,000, $35,000, $50,000, that's the maximum the court can go up to. Right. So the court can go up to $17,000. But so there's a little, I think, confusion, and courts are struggling with whether the AVA can be waived or not. There's been one case that has looked at the Seventh Circuit that said it can't be waived. It has to be mandatory. And then it has to be at least some amount. So I think some courts sometimes give a dollar amount here for the AVAA. Sometimes courts just don't impose it at all, which I think the courts are struggling whether that's correct or not. But the court does need to impose, it seems to be, at least some amount for the AVAA. And what sometimes happens is courts get confused between, and you may say a district judge might say, I'm awarding you $3,000 under the AVAA. Is that restitution, or that's not what the victim gets? Restitution, and then the victim's reserve fund is where the assessment goes.
You said it's deposited into the child pornography victim's reserve fund. Do you happen to know what that fund's used for?
Typically, it's used for where individuals can, sometimes if they don't want to get restitution, it is a way for individuals to potentially get some relief or get some monetary amount to help those individuals who are in need. That's typically where it's
used. With maybe treatment costs and things like that. Okay, interesting. All right. And the third one we have is JVTA, Justice for Victims of Trafficking Act. And this is another assessment.
Correct. This is another assessment. This actually goes a little bit broader. The AVAA really focuses on just certain types of offenses. The JVTA is a little bit more expansive. It not only includes sex offenses and child pornography offenses, it also includes sometimes alien smuggling and even labor cases. But what we're going to focus on today in particular is the sex offense area and the cases that we see there. And this is a specific number. So this is a $5,000 amount that it goes on a non-indigent person. I always have trouble saying that word. What the court needs to do is in these kind of cases is impose a $5,000 amount on the JVTA. There are some issues about some dates and timeframes that people need to be aware of, because there was a lapse of the statute when it expired. It has now been re-upped, so there may be some issues courts need to look to. But the way that the JVTA works with this $5,000 is the court has to impose it unless the defendant can prove that they're non-indigent. And the way the defendant can prove that is, again, they look to those factors from the ability to pay a fine at 18 U.S.C. 3572, such as, was the defendant appointed counsel or was he able to hire counsel? We want to look at what the ability of the defendant can pay when it involves that special assessment. Here, does he have resources? And does, as many probation officers know, they're already doing these kind of looks at the financial considerations that the defendant has as it relates to fines. And then the other thing they'll look at, when the person is released, what kind of job prospects does that individual have in earning?
So that $5,000, is that per count of conviction or per individual?
That's a great question. And it's one that's kind of split the circuits as well. In the Second Circuit, they do it per offender. So it would be someone has three counts of, say, trafficking, an image of child pornography, a production count, and also maybe another count, those three counts. In the Second Circuit, that would be a $5,000 amount because it's per offender. In places like the Third, the Ninth, and the Tenth that have looked at this, they would say those three counts would be a $15,000 amount. So that's what, because it's per count for that. So I think in general, more courts are doing it per account and not by just per offender. So if there's multiple counts, it's going to be higher than $5,000. So you can have in all these cases really three separate amounts. You can have a restitution order, you can have the special assessment under the AVAA, and then you can have a third order under the JVTA. The JVTA is one that is going to be probably the closest one to being non-mandatory or discretion. So there are times when that is waived. The other ones, the AVAA, typically get a little bit smaller amounts than maybe the $17,000, $35,000, and the $50,000 I mentioned. And the restitution is one that's going to be mandatory with, in many cases, a minimum of $3,000 per victim.
That's a lot of information to keep track of. It really is. Anything else that we haven't covered regarding these assessments?
No, I think if people really want to get some more information, we have on our website at ussc.gov, we have some Adobe Connect program that we had done on this topic where we delved into this topic a little bit more. And then as I think people know, and I'm sure you've mentioned this before, people can call the helpline with questions, or basically what we like is written submissions, because this is going to be a really tricky area. And Lori, as you said at the beginning, it's something that I think people overlook because people are really focused on the amount of time is the individual going to get, and they don't focus as much on restitution. But or even some of these special assessments. And with restitution, there's going to be typically that known victim. So the courts really should try to get that section right as much as possible.
Yeah, these cases have so many things to take into consideration. They really do. So keeping mind of those financial penalties, defendant's ability to pay, super important in these cases. And as Alan mentioned, if you have questions, as always, please reach out on the helpline and we'll go to Alan and we'll get the answer and we will call you back.
I think it's the opposite. Lori's the expert in this area.
Not when it comes to the financial stuff. No, that's you. All right, Alan, thank you very much, and hope to see you again on a future podcast.
Thank you, Lori.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Sentencing Practice Talk. Be sure to subscribe if you haven't already to the podcast on iTunes or Spotify to stay up to date. Please be advised that the information provided by commission staff is offered to assist in understanding and applying the sentencing guidelines. The information does not necessarily represent the official position of the commission, should not be considered definitive, and is not binding upon the commission, court, or the parties in any case. This episode was produced and published at taxpayer expense. That's all for now. Thanks for listening.